to the 17th episode of the 5th season of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 9th of October, and in this episode we're going to hear Tony interview Mark Shuttleworth and interview the people behind Nikki and the robots. We will of course cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, and go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Alan, and joining me tonight are Mark.
Hello.
Laura.
Hello.
And Tony.
Hello.
Mix it up a bit there. How is everyone?
That doesn't work as a joke.
No, it doesn't really, does it? Tony, what have you been up to?
I went to SkyCon at the weekend.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Where's that
really?
Then?
It's in, well, it was in Ireland, Limerick in Ireland.
And what is it?
It's a conference run by the Computer Society at the University of Limerick. Oh. And they have people come along and talk, and they invited me along. Because they have good taste, and I gave a talk, and there were lots of other people there. A lot of undergraduates from the university, but also some people from elsewhere around Ireland come along for it. Yeah, it was good fun and very interesting as well.
Did you get to attend many talks?
Yes, many more than I do at Ogg camps. I think all of the Ogg camps combined, I think I went to more talks in one weekend. Yes.
I saw a couple of photos posted online, and both of them were you holding a cocktail or a beer or something.
That might not be entirely representative of what I did. I also showed lots of photographs of you.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, I saw
really?
That.
Yes.
You tweeted those too.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, Laura Tchaikovsky was tweeting those in my talk.
But
yes, I had a
had fun
cocktail. Yes, very much so.
Awesome.
Good fun. And you'll hear content from that over the next couple of episodes. So.
Oh, good.
Listening.
Super.
So,
Laura, how about yourself? What have you been up to?
I got a weekend on my own.
Oh, of course. you chose not to go with Tony to SkyCon.
I didn't have to get up. I didn't have to get dressed.
Okay.
Could eat. Played Nikki and the Robots.
Ah, excellent. Yeah, more about Nikki and the Robots a bit later.
Indeedy.
We're sounding very coordinated this evening.
It does. Yeah. Sounds like this was kind of planned and everything. Awesome.
Mm. Mark?
I've been on holiday.
Oh. Where did you go?
Portugal.
Was it nice?
Yeah, it was very sunny.
You haven't got much of a tan.
No.
Not as much as I had last time.
David Dickinson. yeah, but I did see Ubuntu in the wild.
Oh, really?
Faro Airport in Portugal have these sort of like information kiosk first aid point things.
Oh, was it crashed?
That's how I knew. Yeah. Well, when we were going there, it was like the middle of the night, so obviously no one was doing anything about it, but there was one sat on the Grub bootloader menu.
Oh, no.
But then, yeah, the rest of the time they were all working. But yeah, that was just sat there waiting for someone to press enter.
Yeah, it's going to bite us, isn't it? One, you know, we keep going around taking photos, well, I do, of
blue screens
at airports. And you know, people are just going to start sending me Ubuntu crash dialogues on covering up stuff.
Oh, well, that just shows that it's being more widely used. That could only be a good thing.
Yes, I guess.
What about you, Alan?
I got sick of my micro server being about 8 inches from my head on my desk and making a lot of noise. So I moved it somewhere else. And in the process, I re-enabled my current cost.
Ooh.
So my graphs that have been offline for over a year, I've re-enabled. And yeah, that all works quite nicely. I've got it plugged into the micro server, so it's all uploading nice, pretty graphs showing my usage and... Yeah, when I tweeted it, people were saying, "Ah, did you turn the kettle on at 20 past 8? Yes. Oh, yes. My graphs. Yes.
Yes.
You get that a lot, don't you, Tony?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, let's get on with the show.
So, at the weekend, I was at SkyCon, as I believe I just mentioned, and I sat down with one Mr. Mark Shuttleworth, the founder of Ubuntu and Canonical, the self-appointed benevolent dictator for life, and we sat down next to a quite noisy fridge.
What can you find a toilet to stand in?
Or a train.
Well, he has some standards, of course. Yeah. So, yes, so with bearing that in mind, we will now play you the interview I recorded with Mark.
I'm here at SkyCon with Mark Shuttleworth. How are you doing, Mark?
Groovy. Hi.
So you've been talking about Ubuntu and the latest things that are coming up and cloud and design and things like that. One of the things that struck me was that design is where the focus has been for Ubuntu for the desktop for the last 2-3 years at least. Where do you think it's going next? When are we going to start to see Ubuntu on TVs and phones and tablets?
Well, think of the magnitude of the shift that we're making, right? We're going from a very simple focus on one use case to having to accommodate these very diverse ways of using services and computing. And that's a big transition with a small team. So it does take time. But I really think the pieces are coming together. We showed how Unity fits onto a TV, and I think that explained to people some of the choices that were made in the creation of Unity. And as the phone and tablet interfaces fall into place, I think people will realize that this is a unique family of interfaces that are designed from the start to be a family, each of them efficient for their particular kind of interaction, but still telling one story in one language. We get fantastic engagement from members of the community who are passionate about those individual pieces. But I think for the vast majority, you know, when they see a big new release, they may be unaware of the number of small things that had to be done to make that possible.
One of the challenges, if you have an interface like Unity, which is a consistent experience across a number of different interfaces, is the applications that sit alongside it. How much influence, how much work and effort can you realistically put in to those applications to make sure that level of that part of the experience is consistent?
Sure. Well, we certainly can't do it all. You know, I mean, we certainly don't have a vision of saying, well, we're going to sit and create, you know, all of the apps for all of the form factors. What we hope to do is to enable, and in, you know, it's up to the open source community whether they step up. Historically, I think what we can infer from the past is that some people will and some people vocally won't. so what we're saying is, you know, we're setting out to do something that nobody else has set out to do, to create this responsive interface across all of these form factors. That creates opportunities for people who want to deliver their app or their experience across this diversity. Some people will say that's just a ridiculous idea and they're not going to touch it with a barge pole. Others will sit down thoughtfully and do amazing things. And I think we'll have enough of the latter to build a cohesive, coherent experience across all of those platforms.
Do you think that's been a problem with the Linux desktop in the past, is that people have been essentially trying to use the same applications, perhaps just with their own slight twist in their distros? But now we're looking at saying, we need everybody to step up to the game to use this this model for Unity, but without affecting the work they're doing to enable their applications to be used in other distributions. Is it a fragmentation? Might be the wrong word, but is that a diversity of effort that's not sustainable? Maybe.
I think people should do what they want to do. You know what I mean? Like, people should have fun and do what they want to do. All we're saying is that we're creating something that's never existed before. And we're doing it all as open source and giving it all away. That's a pretty incredible thing. And, the odd person who steps up and gets grumpy because we're creating something that's never existed before and giving it all away and doing it all as an open source, I think they just look grumpy, you know what I mean? At least to my eyes. But that's not really the point. The point is that there's going to be an opportunity to deliver open source apps to all of these profoundly important kinds of personal computing. And I hope people will grab that with both hands and do fantastic stuff with it. Some will, and it doesn't take that many. You know, it just takes a couple of bright people to do cool stuff.
Speaking of grumpy people, there have been quite a few on the internet in the last week or two talking about the Amazon shopping search or the context search. Each release of Ubuntu for the last couple of years seems to have had something that's landed not long before the release that's caused people to get upset. Is that a problem? does that distract from perhaps the good changes? And not that those changes are bad changes, but does it distract from all the positives that are coming in a release of Ubuntu?
We're a little torn between the mantra of release early and often and, oh my God, there are bugs, right? Mm. So you know, on the one hand, we'll have smart people saying, you know, you should have released this earlier, and other people saying, you know, you shouldn't have released this. You shouldn't have put this in the release. Those are always tough decisions. There is a certain audience that wants every release of Ubuntu to be an LTS, maintained for 20 years, you know, with perfect security support for free. Well, that's just not going to happen. You know, we're constantly trying to find the balance between, you know, what users need, the need for change, and the fact that the rest of the world is changing around us as well. A lot of the change, you know, is stuff that we inherit from the open source community at large. I think the fact that people get upset about Ubuntu is more a reflection of the fact that Ubuntu is hugely widely used and people care about it and love it and depend on it, and so any sort of change is unsettling. It's certainly true that occasionally we screw up. That's true of anybody. It's also true that if you look at all of the change that's happened over the last 4 years, many of which have been changes that, you know, caused the sky to fall in and the world to end for the blogosphere. Looking back at those changes, on balance, I think they've all been phenomenally good. Try and use Ubuntu 8.04. Mm. You know, that's two LTSs ago. It's like a completely different world, right? And more than that, if you look at the change that's been driven in the broader open source ecosystem, we've been leading that. We led the creation of new interfaces. Nobody was reinventing the interface before we went out and did it. There is a natural human sort of forking and fragmentation that goes on. The Red Hat guys couldn't possibly use something from Canonical, and so they had to have their own one. And we had to be the bad guys. But I really don't care about all of that. What I care about is that it's moving in a positive direction. We're leading that, we're doing it with integrity and professionally, and we fix the mistakes that we make. So what are you asking? Are you asking that the fact that stuff lands late in the cycle is problematic? Well,
it seems problematic for some people, but they are the people who are using the development version anyway.
Right, exactly. And so these are folk who would be equally upset if we said, well, we're not going to put out a release. You can just stay on the LTS. And they would say, oh, this is terrible. I'm going to Arch. Okay, fine. You know, so that's that.
Yeah. How much change is acceptable for people? Unity is quite different from the old GNOME.
Yeah.
And people have had to learn how to use it. And generally, people have done and they've accepted the change and they moved on. How do you judge whether a change is too much? Would you ever look at not making a huge amount of change in a release and maybe spreading it over a few releases just because of the disruption that it might cause people?
Well, we could do some things. For example, we could have put Unity into, you know, as a side option. The challenge is that we're only going to create this change in the world if we lead it with conviction. Right? This is a major change in the world. I mean, just think about this. You're Microsoft, you've got Apple, you've got Google, and you've got us, right? None of the other ones really matter, right? Red Hat, the CEO has said publicly he doesn't care about the desktop. So GNOME isn't going to do what we need. If you actually want a platform that really will create change, not just for you, but for real change, right? Someone's going to have to lead that. So that's us. And so that's what we're going to do. And so if you know, that's not going to work for everybody, but then maybe they just shouldn't use the platform. Here's our commitment. You know, we hire the best people we can. We attract the best people in the community we can. We have the most open community processes. There's more independent participation in Unity design than in any other desktop environment. There's more open participation in the code. it's a great place to be, and we're creating the future. So,
Ubuntu has been a project that you've been working on for 10 years. Does it still appeal? Does it still excite you in the morning?
It excites me if I believe we can actually change the world. Otherwise, it's an exhausting, crazy, you know, very difficult, impossible task. But the possibility that we can change the world is what makes me do it. So I won't, you know, you can imagine that I'm not particularly inclined to apologize for leading that change, right? That's why we do it, right? We genuinely believe that this can be a better platform, but it wasn't going to be a better platform if we kept GNOME 2. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
That had had its own 10 years, its own decade to fail, right? So somebody had to do something different. It was, you know, fish or cut bait. Go big or go home. And I'm pretty proud of what we've done. As you say, people have come around to Unity. You know, we now get told not to make more changes to Unity because it's perfect. How could you have changed it? Which is ironic in its own way. But I think as the vision unfolds, as people start to get to use it on different form factors, that, you know, we'll build a really strong community.
Is Ubuntu now where you thought it would be when you started out 10 years ago or so?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because clearly it's achieved things that I might have thought were impossible at the time. You know, that Dell is going to ship a huge number of PCs with Ubuntu globally next year is fantastic. HP, Lenovo, all doing the same. That's kind of fantastic. At the same time, there are still big challenges, right? Big unanswered questions. What's going to happen with Android and Chrome OS? What's going to happen with the new Win 8 and Win Phone? What is the real role of Ubuntu in the cloud and so on? There's still some sort of big open questions, big problems to solve. It's very straightforward. I think it's the best platform around. I think we have the most amazing community working with us. And I think we have our heart and gaze firmly set on occupying the future. That's what we're going to do.
And that sounds like an excellent note on which to wrap up. So thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to me.
Sure. It's great to meet. Cheers.
And now it's time for the news. Samsung have released F2FS, a new file system designed specifically for use on solid-state flash memory.
It's easy for you to say.
Does it do things like not writing the same sectors again?
Trim.
Or, sorry?
Trim support. That's what that is.
Okay, good. Does it do that?
I guess it must do, and yeah.
Cool.
Yes. And an additional patch set has been submitted to the Linux kernel to add support for the file system.
Good old patch set.
Patch set.
Oh.
So that means that it'll be in things like Android for Samsung phones, etc.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah,
makes sense.
New file system.
You've got to go a long way to impress Tony with the file system, that's for sure. Version 1.0 of Open Web OS, the embedded OS originally seen on the Palm Pre smartphone, has been released. The OS can currently be run on Open Embedded Emulator and has support for the Enyo framework for writing cross-platform JavaScript apps. Future plans, including porting to other devices and adding open source media components.
So, it's not dead.
No.
Excellent. Sad to see it's kind of still, yeah, still alive. And
well, not struggling. Not shipping on any devices.
It has the community's full support.
Excellent. Well, that'll get it a long way. We know how well that works.
What was the one that Hugo had? Sorry.
Hugo?
Yeah, that original one.
No, he had an N900, which is running Migo, maybe?
No, way back, the first mobile phone.
Hugo's first mobile phone?
No, the first mobile phone for Linux that had Linux on it.
Actually, it was a Motorola. Oh, I know what you're talking about. The Neo 1973.
Open Moco.
That's the one. The one where you always use the
gag down in Acapulco.
Can it make phone calls yet?
No.
Actually, there's that phone. A company has made a hardware upgrade kit. So if you have that phone, you can take it all to bits and
throw them away individually.
Go to the shops and buy a different phone. Yes.
Excellent. Microsoft have submitted an unusual DMCA takedown request requiring Google to remove certain URLs from its index due to copyright infringement. Among the URLs that allegedly infringe Microsoft's copyright are a collection of pages from sites including the BBC and Wikipedia, all relating to the number 45.
This would be a lot more fun if it was 42.
Yeah.
People wouldn't take it anywhere near as seriously if it was 42.
And is it indeed. Is it literally got to have 45 in the URL, or is it like combinations
it's stuff of multiple? So a lot of the URLs are like sort of dodgy looking websites, but then it's got like stuff about like people who are 45 years old and something that happened, like the 45th person to take the Olympic torch sorts of other like references to the number 45.
So this would have been some automated thing.
Yeah. Which, for some reason, as well as these websites apparently distributing software, picked up completely innocuous websites all relating to this number.
Harmless mistake.
Yeah.
Anyone could do it. Three missing children's charities have supported the launch of notfound.org, a way for websites to make good use of their 404 not found pages by displaying information about missing children.
Oh, okay. How does it work?
You basically put a little bit of code in your 404 page and it goes to get a... This is assuming your website has a 404 page, and that's very easy to set up on. In fact, it's easy on most like Drupal and WordPress things. Mm.
It's done for you.
Yeah. If not, you know, Apache and so and so have a way to do it. Mm. But if someone ever goes to a broken URL on your site and ends up at a 404, it loads an image and some content from this notfound.org, shows a picture of a missing person and some details about where they were seen and contact details for how you can get hold of the charities involved.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I put it on my website when I heard about it.
Oh, cool.
Because I thought, well, the most impressive thing I've ever had as a 404 page was a game of Yahtzee, which was quite good fun.
But perhaps not quite as socially worthy.
Ultimately pointless, yeah. Mm. Have to see how well this works out and how many people adopt it.
It's a good idea. Mm.
Finnish startup Jolla Limited have announced the upcoming release of a new smartphone running the open source Migo operating system recently abandoned by Nokia. Hmm. Jolla hopes to compete with a unique interface which is well patented and doesn't copy anybody, according to the Jolla chief executive.
Well, that's great news, isn't it? Someone else on the landscape having something well patented.
Yes.
Mm. Things can only go well there, can't they?
Yeah, it's top of the list of my priorities.
Yes. Never mind a phone that can actually make phone calls. And finally, the Humble Bundle is back with an ebook bundle, sporting a whole bunch of books.
There's a ghost.
In e-form that you can pay what you want for.
Yes. Excellent. What books?
It's a graphic novel by Neil Gaiman.
Oh. Is that one of the ones you have to pay over the average to get?
Yes.
And there's a book by Cory Doctorow and a few other less well-known authors. But it's all DRM-free, pay what you want, in the same way that the Humble Games bundles.
So you can get them in like ebook or Mobi or PDF or whatever.
Sonar,
exactly.
All
right. Yeah, but you've just bought it, Laura.
Yes.
Excellent. Oh, let us know how it works out.
And we have some events.
Ooh.
I haven't read the first one.
Something at lanyard.com.
Yes, it's a hack day at South Hacton.
Oh, right.
Oh, cool. Now you're interested. Now you know that it's actually nearby. Yes, they're having a South Hacton hack day on the 14th of October from 10:30 until 4:30. It's in Southampton in the UK at the 29th Southampton Scout Group building.
Brilliant.
Yes. And the other event is one that actually hasn't happened and isn't planned yet, but is in embryonic stage. I was having a chat with Laura Tchaikovsky yesterday and today about something she wanted to set up called Hack and Talk. And the idea is that there's an event maybe three or four times a year, one day only on each of those dates,
right?
And you go along and you talk about stuff and you hack on stuff, maybe two tracks, no keynotes, no huge amounts of technology, all done back to basics with post-it notes, so you just get in there,
post-it notes,
do hacking, listen to interesting people talk about cool technology. And at the moment she's looking for a venue to hold her first hack and talk.
Brilliant.
And you can get in contact with Laura at Twitter at HackNTalk, or you can join the IRC channel on the Freenode Network, HackNTalk, as well. And the website is HackNTalk.org. Now I'm, yeah, the name sounded great yesterday when we came up with it, but right. Now I'm having to read it out. HackNTalk, it's exactly what you think, HackNTalk.org.
I hope they will be serving fish chips. HackNTalk. Right, is that it for the events?
Yes.
Hello, and welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. Good day to all our listeners, wherever you are around the British Empire, or indeed, Bondi Beach, where I believe the colonial commoners ride the waves on a sort of ironing board.
A surfboard, Douglas.
That will be our delightful co-host, Miss Deirdre Morris-Oxford. Good day, Deirdre.
Good day, Douglas. I see the bruises have almost gone from last week. How is your eye?
Fine.
And your nose?
Fine.
And your split lip?
Fine. Can we get on with this week's show?
Actually, we've had several requests to listen again to your altercation in last week's show with Mr. Declan Thicket.
Discussion, Deirdre.
Altercation, Douglas.
Look, he started it.
Mr. Declan Thicket certainly finished it.
He caught me unawares.
What was it you said about his idea for the self-service shop? Poppycock?
Well, really, it is the most preposterous idea. A self-service, indeed. There's thousands of shop assistants would be put out of work under such a scheme. I'd have thought you'd be dead against it as you're some sort of socialist.
Better than a national socialist, Douglas.
It will never catch on at Fortnum and Mason's, I can tell you. Putting your own provisions through an electronic till? Next, you'll have us carrying the bags home ourselves. It really is a scheme too far.
Just imagine the thousands of shop girls who could get a proper education and perform intellectual jobs. Thinking jobs.
Thinking up absurd shopping schemes like Mr. Declan Thicket.
How is the bruising on your...
And now we've spent so much time recapping last week's show, we don't have time for this week's inventions. Gosh, and indeed, darn it, Deirdre. That's all for Tomorrow's Technology Today. Toodlepip and God Save the King.
So on the line, we have Zunka and Ivan from Joyride Labs. Hello, guys. How are you?
Hi, we're fine. We're thank fine. You.
Whereabouts in the world are we calling you from? No, that's not
we're
right.
Calling from Berlin in Germany. Yeah, and Zunka's in the kitchen and I'm in his room.
Brilliant. That was very, very precise.
Oh, hang on. You're both in the same location.
Yeah, but... We created an echo by using two phones, and we weren't sure about using one phone.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I'm so glad, dedication. So glad you tested this stuff out. Thank you very much. So the reason why I wanted to talk to you is because I found out via OMG Ubuntu that there was this cool game called Nikki and the Robots, and I downloaded it and had a play with it, and I paid for some additional content, and you guys made it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, tell us a bit about where you started. What got you started with Nikki and the Robots?
Zunke, will you go ahead? Yeah, I started creating the game with Florian Hofer, a friend of mine, and he's a game enthusiast, as I am too. And we thought it would be great to do a game together, and we were both in places in our lives where we thought it would be great to just try to become game developers. So we just started, and it was quite interesting, and it took way longer than we anticipated, but I'm very glad that we did it.
How long from start to finish? So, I mean, would you say it was finished now? You know, how long from
have
start
you
to finish?
Been working on?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been working on it for 3 years, not full-time, but it has been a lot of work, yeah.
Has it been a part-time thing or full-time, you know, doing your day job?
No, we both had to do other things as well.
Okay.
To earn some money. And,
So one of the interesting things is the model under which you've released Nikki and the Robots. It's the game engine is open source, am I right? And then you can pay for additional content. Can you tell us how you selected that model and whether it's working out well for you?
So I joined the project like a year or 1.5 ago. And one of the things that got me interested was that it is open source. And they happened to be in the same city in which I lived. So I contacted them and talked to them a bit about business because it didn't seem very clear how exactly they were planning to do it. And it was back then the Humble Indie Bundle was rather new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested in that and talked about them, about the Humble Indie Bundle model with them. And Zünke and Florian were quite interested. I don't know if you had considered such a model before already, Zünke. I think we were, when Ivan joined the team, we were just in the process of getting the model in the way it is now. So we were already talking about these ideas, and I think my main motivation for it is that I think it's rather absurd to prevent people from consuming your product
mm-hmm.
by digital rights management or the like. So I thought it would be cool to have some model like this, and then we just needed to figure out how to still make money off it, and we decided on this model that the game itself, the game engine, and the basic graphics and the level editor are all open source and free, and you have to pay for additional content.
Because I'm a bit of a license geek, am I right in thinking that the fact it's lesser GPL, isn't it? The game,
yeah.
The game engine is that. Like necessary in your business model in that then you can have the closed source levels which you can sell, or is there another reason for it being LGPL?
Well, I think in the beginning there was the idea that there might be some code included in the story episodes
mm-hmm.
which would not be open sourced. So to link that together with the game engine would for that to work, you would need the lesser GPL.
Yeah.
But I think it's not necessary the way it is now.
Okay.
Because there's no code included in the story episode.
Oh, right it's now. Just assets.
We decided that we wanted to put all the code under an open source license.
Right. So cool.
It's all in the
and speaking of the code, part. It's am I right in saying it's written in Haskell? Well,
yes.
That's... I think I've only ever come across one other thing on my machine that I've ever known was written in Haskell. What made you choose that?
Which was that?
It was a podcast downloader called HPodder.
Oh, okay, yeah.
See, and nobody's heard of it. What made you choose Haskell, and what does that give you that other languages you could have chosen didn't?
Well, I'm the programmer, and I'm a Haskell enthusiast, and I just couldn't imagine having fun writing using another language for such a big project.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a programmer,
I am. I'm
yeah.
not.
So you know that the language is pretty important to the way you think and the way you solve problems and. Yes, it's really my taste.
And I suppose it has all of the sort of the bindings for all of the bits that you need to make games as well already there.
Well, the language community is not as big as for other languages, obviously, but there are very very great there's a very great foreign function interface, so you can create your own bindings,
right.
in a kind of nice way.
Mm-hmm.
So we, for example, we created bindings for Qt, for the things we needed from Qt.
Oh, right, wow.
To use the graphics
yeah.
layer of Qt. And that turned out much less painful than I thought.
So if you're developing in Haskell and you're using Qt, and there's also a bunch of assets that go along with the game, did you create those yourselves, or did you commission them from somewhere else, and the music, and how did that all come together?
Well, for the graphics part, it was mainly Florian, who is a graphic designer and did all the pixely graphics, and the music took a long time, but we asked C. Error, an artist from the Netherlands, who does 8-bit music, and we asked him if we could use his music. You can also buy his music for pay what you want.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's interesting. So that album that you're using in the game, did that already exist, or did you commission that, or you just just went to him because you liked his music and it fit the style of the game?
Yeah, it did exist before we put it in the game. It's called Rainbow Parade.
Right. It's really cute.
We thought it really, really well. It was strange when I first put it in the game. I was really surprised how the character changed of the game when there's suddenly music, and then I needed some days to get accustomed to the
And talking of character, the character Nikki, there's a very distinct style to Nikki and the Robots, the kind of pixel art. It's lovely to look at. And Nikki, him or herself, I can't quite tell. It's someone in a cat outfit by the look of it. How did that come about?
It's just odd.
It's odd, but it's very cute.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Yeah. Why?
Well, thanks for saying that. Ivan, are you still there?
Yeah, but I think you should cover that as well. Okay. Well, it's actually a cat. Half a cat and half a ninja costume.
Okay.
Like the one I have.
That's the idea. We thought we wanted the game to be a bit to have like a childlike feeling to it.
Right.
So we didn't want to explicitly say that these characters are children, and I don't think of them as children, but we wanted to have all the game to have more. For example, the robots have more like a toy-like feel.
I think that's
what we're aiming for. And we thought it would be cool to have a character that looks a bit like a child and has a costume to make it a bit to lighten up, if you will.
Right. And
so the theme was to make it more accessible to children as well, right?
Right, and yeah. I have to say, when I'm playing the game, my two kids, one's six and one's nine, and they just love watching me play the game. They get frustrated themselves when they play it because they die all the time, but but they just come running into the room when they hear the music going. And just stand there and watch me playing. It's really very lovely. So, how long have you had the pay what you like scheme going? Are you going to keep that going, or has it got an end date?
So I think we started on September 17th, selling it from gerardlabs.de. Zünke programmed the website himself, also in Haskell, and it's also open source.
Oh, wow. And excellent.
So we first said, we'll do it for 1 week, then we extended it, and we extended it, and then we last said that we will just keep going at it until we find a good reason to stop selling it, pay what you want,
cool.
Which might be something like getting into Steam or selling it on other portals.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't really worked on that yet.
So there's a it's got a very similar kind of feel, the pay what you like interface. It's a very similar feel to the Humble Bundle with the, you know, the little pie chart and graphs.
They are absolutely our main inspiration.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they ripped you off completely. it says here statistics based on 836 purchases, and alternative purchase methods are available. Was that important to you to have things like Bitcoin and other ways for people to pay?
So, well, we wanted just to include these options because it seemed to be rather easy to do. We had only very few Bitcoin payments, and nobody tried to make a video to trade it for a game yet.
Oh, that was one of the payment options. How does that work?
Yeah, so you find a person and let them play the basic game, and film them and film the game, and then send the video to us so we can like look how the person reacts. The game, maybe our requirements are a bit too complicated.
I'm totally doing that with my 6-year-old son.
Yeah,
he would love that. You can see him punching the keyboard when he dies.
You asked why Haskell earlier, and so as the newest member of a three-headed group, I think that the philosophy of this project. In part, was doing something that you yourself would love, and Zönke obviously loves Haskell, so that's what he used, and Florian definitely loves the style he created. And during development, we often would take a step back and just so test the game and comment to each other, "Hey, this is a pretty good game, actually."
It's nice to have that reaction to something you've created. You've said it's open source, and I can see I've downloaded and had a look at it myself. Have you had any contributions directly in terms of code?
Not the game itself, I think. There were certainly some upstream changes to some projects.
Is it something you're actively looking for, or are you more interested in people creating levels for the game?
We are definitely interested in more levels, but we also currently are a bit on hold regarding code development. So we might ask the community for contribution for two features, which are quite well-defined. We want gamepad support and a language, so other language support for languages other than English.
Oh, right.
But we haven't worked a way out yet how to communicate to the community that they could contribute that, which is also one of the things that I take from this project, that the open source part we could have communicated it better, perhaps, maybe made it more obvious how to contribute as a coder.
Right. I mean, I didn't even know about it until after it had come out, and, you know, it was already, you know, for want of a better word, finished. Not that I would have necessarily been able to... Go on.
So it's not finished, it's the first episode, which is done.
Right.
But we are on hold with the future episodes, currently still marketing the first one.
Right. So would you see your next steps as further development of Nikki and the robot's characters in other games, or further development within this game, or moving on to something completely different?
Well, I think that
depends a bit on...
Yeah.
Sorry?
No.
That depends a lot on how much money we raise with this first episode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if it's going to go up, further, then we will have the resources to just work on a second episode. And if not, we will just, you know, do different projects, I think, all of us.
Right. So if people do want to get involved, or indeed they want to buy the levels and have a play, what's the best place for them to go?
So currently we sell the game only on our website, which is joyridelabs.de or buy.joyridelabs.de.
Cool.
And it uses PayPal and Bitcoin and this video making option.
I just had a look at that. It looks really cool idea.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's very innovative. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been very interesting.
Well, and thanks for having us.
Thank no you. Problem at all. And good luck with future developments.
And now it's time for a tiny little bit about Ubuntu.
Yeah, it's pretty much insignificant, really. I don't think anyone will notice.
No.
So Canonical.
Should we mention it?
Yes. It starts Canonical. Canonical's announced that a new screen will be added to the desktop download process to allow people to make financial contributions to the Ubuntu project.
Uh-oh, ooh. She said money.
Ooh, right. I don't think I did. It's a contribution.
So how are Canonical forcing people to pay for Ubuntu?
They don't this let you press the button.
Yes.
Right, Grr. Okay. So what happens now? What's the new user experience?
It's like, you say download Ubuntu, and right. then you say download the desktop CD, and then you say download the 32-bit version, and it pops up a screen a bit like the Humble Bundle screen with some sliders on saying, contribute some money to Ubuntu if you want.
Right.
And you can put a slider up to say, contribute some money to making the desktop better, contribute some money to supporting Kubuntu and Lubuntu and things like that, or contribute some more money towards games, or you can say no, just download it.
Right. So this isn't a compulsory tax on Ubuntu users.
No,
that's not what I'd call it.
Okay.
No, but it's a contribution.
Cool.
Jono blogged about this, and in one of the various comments at the bottom, one of his questions to one of the commenters is, so if we made the button look less like a link, would you like it better?
Yeah, if you want to pay some money, there's a button that says contribute.
Right.
Otherwise, there's a link next to the button that says take me to the download. So the button stands out to you.
I can
the link
see
doesn't.
Why. Yeah, I can see why people get funny about that, because when you go to something like on the Windows platform, it's notorious when you go to a website that's like, downloading a free antivirus software, there'll be a big shiny button that says pay for the full version, and then a tiny little link next to it that says, you can get the free version if you really want to. But we'd rather you didn't. So I can see why it looks like that kind of thing that looks, like we're really trying to encourage you to give us some money.
Well, yeah.
Which isn't unreasonable, I don't think.
Yes.
And in fact, loads of people in the past have said to us directly and, to me individually, have said, how can I give some money, to Ubuntu?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Canonical blog says that the reason they've done it is because people have asked them about it. It didn't.
Right.
But, yeah. It doesn't say, we'd just like some money, please.
Well, there was that case of that young lad who tragically died from some illness a couple of years ago, and in his will he left some money to the Ubuntu Foundation.
Okay.
And the problem is, it's actually quite problematic for us to be able to figure out how to use that money in the foundation and get the money out of the foundation. So it's easier to give the money to Canonical, and then Canonical curate what happens with that money based on the sliders and, how much people give.
I like the idea of the sliders, being able to say, I want to support whatever it might be, Zubuntu, Lubuntu.
It doesn't work quite in the same way as the Humble Bundle, though. With the Humble Bundle, you put your total amount in, and then the sliders just tell you the proportion that you're going to give to each thing, whereas this is, you slide them up to give more money, and then it calculates to
you
afterwards. So, with the Humble Bundle, you choose an amount first,
and
then
you divide it. Right.
But with this, you choose how much by sliding the various things.
And then at the end, it totals up how much you've decided to give and finds some comedic thing that it's worth the same as.
As you sort of adjust the amount, it gives you a sort of an equivalent. So a pint of beer or a t-shirt or a camel.
But the thing is, that is a conversation that I will have, for example, recently with my wife. We were talking about buying something for the kids, and we worked out how much it was. It was like 4 bottles of wine. And that's how, it was related, was it's the same as, a quiet,
quantity of alcohol.
A quiet night in for you.
Should we say pleased?
Did she listen?
No. Almost certainly not.
Yeah, okay. So I'm sure that there'll be lots of people shouting about this because, you know, they'll shout about anything.
Well, but we want their first.
It's always been tricky whenever we talk about money relating to Ubuntu.
Mm. Yeah.
And part of that trickiness is everyone knows that this was originally bankrolled by Mark.
Yeah.
And with his, you know, magic box of shiny coins. And that's the elephant in the room, is the fact that there's a guy there who's given a boatload of money to the creation of this thing. And yeah, some people resent the idea of, oh, why should I give him my money? He's clearly got loads. Well, the fact is he's given loads of it to creating this thing. So it's not unreasonable
to other people's salaries.
That we need
like
some
that.
Money, yeah. not to give back to Mark, but we need some money to continue the process.
Yes, it's,
I think.
Yes, you can't rely on one person's benevolence forever.
No.
It's all very British, isn't it?
Is it?
Not wanting to talk about money.
Oh, well, yeah. No, we get it all the way around, all around the world. The locos all around the world have real difficulty whenever they're dealing with money. Although some don't. You know, France and Germany, they seem to get on with it just fine. Yeah.
Well, it's the continental attitude.
It's the continental way.
Cool. What's in the not about Ubuntu this time, Laura?
Oh, I don't know. I'm still looking
at the
blog post.
There's a video on YouTube.
Yes.
Go
video
and watch it.
Of you on YouTube.
Is it good? Me?
It's about Ogcamp. It's not Ogcamp. It's interactive documentary.
It's really cool.
I know. I was in the trailer.
Yeah. And I think the trailer is basically the little intro to the thing as a whole. But yeah, it's got a little bit with Dan sort of chatting about Ogcamp and how it all came together. And then the rest is basically just interviews with people from the community.
Yeah.
And like people who were running sessions and just people who were there hacking on stuff.
It's interactive. It's like one of those make your own adventure books.
Yeah.
So turn to page 12.
You get sort of like a clip with
Does Sorry. It happen in YouTube videos? I don't think so.
You get like a clip where someone starts talking about what they've been doing, and then they get to the end of their bit, and it will say you can go see the full interview with them, or you can carry on with this video, and so you can sort of make your own documentary depending on what you're interested in.
That's sweet.
Cool. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes, and you can check it out.
And that was all made by a member of the community with no involvement from us.
Yes.
Which was quite nice.
Yes, a friend of Dan's, I think.
Yes. Was it one of the Open Labs people, something
I
like
was going to say, was it not Chris from Open Labs?
Yes. Possibly. But who is also a friend of Dan's.
Yes.
Yes. There we go. Excellent. Check that out. It's time for your feedback. And Adam left a comment on the website to point out...
Gulp.
Sorry.
Now is not the time to drink tea.
He talked faster. What would be interesting would be to see if a new beta Ubuntu and Linux typed in Adobe Photoshop in the lens and then bought it through Amazon to discover that it wouldn't run natively on Ubuntu. Is that a good idea? Do you really want to promote Windows software on a different platform? And ultimately, it could be perceived as an alternative software center to the Ubuntu software center.
Actually, we had a bug filed because originally in the... this is talking about the shopping lens in 1210.
Yeah, yeah.
In the shopping lens originally, when you type something in, it would return Android apps from the Amazon Android store, which you can't run on Ubuntu.
Yeah.
So I think there's been some filtering done so that doesn't happen anymore.
Okay.
So it shouldn't let you... find Photoshop and other Windows apps.
There are all sorts of filtering going on there now that there wasn't originally.
Correct, yes.
I see. Less said about that, the better, perhaps.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nigel Verity thought it would be interesting to ponder what would happen if Linux really did take off in a big way.
Certainly we could start to see Linux viruses, so antivirus software would become essential and slow all our computers down. The big proprietary software companies would not go away. They'd start writing non-free software for Linux. Non-technical users would simply buy computers with Linux pre-installed and would be sold proprietary applications to go with them. Linux is not simply another operating system. Behind Windows and Mac OS, there are just email addresses and premium rate phone numbers. Behind Linux, there are real people who often go to great lengths to help each other out on technical issues. If commercial interests look too prominent a role in Linux, much of that community would surely fade away. It may not be a popular view, but I feel that desktop Linux needs to remain niche, or perhaps it's more that there is a demand for a niche operating system with a community ethos. If it grows to a point where it becomes overwhelmed by community interests, then maybe the ultimate accolade for the open source concept will be that Linux itself will be forked. It's an interesting point, and yes, I can see some of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although I'm certainly not sure that he's right that behind Mac OS there's just email addresses and premium rate phone numbers. I'm pretty sure there's people in the shops.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they have all those shops things, don't they? Interesting point.
I'm sure I have an email address. I'm not sure I have a premium phone number, though.
You've got loads in your phone. I saw the other day.
Laura, save me.
Jason left a comment on our website.
Having the adverts in your main searches is like having CCTV in your living room. We all go outside in the world and drive our cars under constant CCTV, but you expect it when you go outside and it doesn't bother you. It's actually reassuring. I don't mind the suggestions and adverts, but put them somewhere where I expect them, like a separate lens with a separate search or in the software center. I like what Unity is trying to do, however it is so bloated I feel it gets in the way. GNOME Classic is dead, may it rest in peace, but don't give me reasons to mourn for it. Bring back that fresh nimbleness that Ubuntu was known for.
That, I found that quite a scary analogy you made there.
What about CCTV?
The idea that you expect it when you go outside and that it doesn't bother you and that it's reassuring. It's only been, what, 10 years since we've been having CCTV everywhere and that's normal?
Well,
that's really quite a...
Yeah.
And does he also find adverts on the web reassuring?
Yeah, that was your extension of the analogy, wasn't it?
Maybe I'm reading too much into this.
There is a sort of time and a place argument, ignoring the analogy. There's a sort of time and a place argument. You'd perhaps expect to see web adverts in the context of a web page.
Of a web page, yes. Yes.
And it's clear that they are an advert.
Yeah.
Whereas, because it's evolved that way.
I agree.
On day one of the web, when, you know, bloke set up his GeoCities site, it wasn't riddled with adverts on day one. They came later when people realised, oh, God, we've got to pay for this somehow.
Yeah.
You know, so
there's some parallels. Ubuntu is the GeoCities of the Linux desktop world.
I'm not sure that analogy went as well as I thought it might.
Oh dear.
Bob left a rant on our website.
You can have all the choice you want, but most people want commercial applications, and Linux doesn't run any commercial products, like Adobe products, for example. But OS X and Windows do run open source software, so why would I buy a laptop with Ubuntu on it if I need Adobe Lightroom and Adobe support and resources? Your platform of choice is determined by the applications you run, and Canonical, Red Hat, etc. haven't figured that out yet. They're still trying to get their user interfaces figured out.
Well, arguably, so are Microsoft. Given they've changed their user interface dramatically in Windows 8. Yeah. So they haven't got their UI figured out quite right. I don't agree that Photoshop and Lightroom are the be-all, end-all of adoption of the Linux desktop by any stretch.
What do you use, Tony, as a professional photographer in the room?
I use a program called Aftershot Pro, by Coral.
Proving Nigel Verity right.
Yes, proprietary software.
Yeah, which is proprietary software. But, yeah. You know, it's not.
It's just not that proprietary software that lots of people have heard of and a lot of people use.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's so another piece of proprietary software.
You may then ask the question, what would I use if Adobe products were available on Ubuntu? And I don't
know
the answer.
Tony, what would you use if Adobe products were available on the Ubuntu platform?
I don't know, but it would be a different decision.
Well, was... he actually says commercial products, not proprietary products. So, I mean...
Okay. I think he means commercial proprietary products.
He means Adobe, basically. He gives
explicit examples of Adobe Lightroom. And, you know, these are insanely popular pieces of software for a certain audience. But there is
a certain
giant,
not most people,
boatload of people out there who have never used Lightroom, who have never, ever used Photoshop in their lives.
Who are generally, hopefully, well-served by Shotwell and FSpot and the like.
Yeah. I'd hope so.
Or don't need anything to do with photos at all.
And yes. And a point that Mark made earlier, there is a certain set of people who, even if we did have Photoshop and Lightroom on Linux, they would just pirate it anyway.
Mm.
They would just go and get a hooky copy. So what benefit does it have for Adobe to port that stuff over if all that's going to happen is people are just get the people who would buy it don't buy it, they just pirate it.
Jay replied to make the point.
No one's forcing you to use Linux if you need to use some overpriced proprietary app, but 99% of us haven't got any need for them at all.
Oh, excellent. That's what I just said.
And Bob replied,
99% of us don't have any need for lenses or user interface tweaks.
Just to show that we have a balanced view of the world.
So that's 99% of people and another 99%.
So 198% of people.
What's,
don't need
well,
it.
Well, no, right. No, there's some crossover there. So 0.01% of people both need lenses and proprietary applications, we have decided.
Therefore, there's no point pointing it.
There will be an interesting study into how many people think that they are in the majority.
Yes, I think 99% of people
think like they're in the majority. Yeah.
Think their needs are the needs of everyone. Yes.
Indeed. Stephen from the Ohio Loco left us this voicemail.
Whoa, are we starting a desktop environment holy war? I mean, granted, yes, CDE was my first experience with X11 back when I used Solaris on a government surplus Sparkbox that I owned. Granted, yes, nowadays I use XFCE on my machine. Mom and Dad use LXDE because, frankly, we don't have a single computer that is built enough to handle Unity 3D, and Unity 2D is deprecated. So why are we going down that road? Really? Unity 3D is nice if you have the hardware to support it. I'm not made of gold, and if I could afford the hardware to support that, a MacBook would be in the running.
Right. If I was made of gold, I wouldn't be working for Canonical.
What would you be doing? Would you be flying into space?
I don't know. Not much, really. Quite heavy.
Yeah.
On the back of a forklift.
Usual day for me, then.
Before anyone else gets.
That's the end of your feedback. That's all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us via our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, where you can find our voicemail numbers and Twitter feed, Facebook and renewed Google Plus page and IRC channel.
What happened to the Google Plus pages?
We lost it.
Someone deleted it.
Yes, me. Can you edit this bit out? Let us know what you think of the show and give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community that makes it. Join us on Tuesday, the 23rd of October, for our next live broadcast, which I won't be on.
Oh,
thank God. What? Sorry?
Hello. Are you skiving?
Yes, I will be skiving in Copenhagen, the Ubuntu Developer Summit.
Excellent.
Ooh. Ooh. So you can come back and tell us stuff.
Maybe.
Yep. The stuff that's publicly available. Cool.
There's going to be some exciting stuff coming up at UDS.
Excellent.
Awesome. Yeah.
And you might like to know that Jonar in our IRC channel has just donated some money to Canonical.
Awesome.
For making Ubuntu.
Brilliant. Wow. What did he put it towards?
He didn't say, but he did say he donated some money and didn't even download the CD.
We need more Amy Fergusons, that's what it is.
Oh, yes, more of those. Right, see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.